Okay, Revelation lecture number 18. We're still on Revelation chapter 17. Look at Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 8. And verse 14. Now God's bringing Ezekiel the prophet to the entrance of the gate of the temple. So Ezekiel 8, verse 14. Then he brought me to the entrance of the gate of the Lord's house, which is toward the north, and behold, women were sitting there weeping for Tammuz. God was trying to show Ezekiel how bad things had gotten in Jerusalem. He takes him to the temple where they're supposed to be worshiping the one true God, the God of the Bible, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And what are the people doing? They're crying for Tammuz, who was Semiramis's and Nimrod's little boy. So they were steeped in this mother-son worship, this paganistic Babylonian harlotry and apostasy and false religion. And a lot of that was due to God then sending the Babylonian Empire to devastate the nation of Judah at that time. Take a look a little bit further so you see how the Israelites dabbled with false worship, or they did a lot more dabbling with it. Jeremiah, look at Jeremiah chapter 7 and verse 18. By the way, we talked about the problem with Roman Catholicism. Our church, I started 7 years ago, Trinity Bible Fellowship, and if we are around for 1,500 years, we will probably be much, much worse than the Roman Catholic Church is today. Reason is because nobody's granted me infallibility. So the our local church, and that's what I think it should just be kept at local churches. In other words, if I die, as long as you guys make sure the next pastor that fills the pulpit is a Bible believing preacher who's preaching the Word of God and has got all the essentials on straight, then you can breathe a sigh of relief for the next generation. But if the day comes when a heretic takes the pulpit, it's time to get out of Trinity Bible Fellowship and go to a different local church. But with Catholicism, because they had that authoritative, infallibility passed on and strong authority even before infallibility got voted in 1870, they managed to keep the true identity of Christ and the essentials like that, although they've added a lot of other garbage over the years. But in other words, if Trinity Bible Fellowship went 1,500 years, we would have the human element without the iron rod of authority to say you must believe this over here. And so it cuts both ways. In actuality, I think each and every generation of church has to be judged anew by who's behind the pulpit and what kind of teaching the church is giving. But take a look at Jeremiah chapter 7, verse 18. The children gather wood, and the fathers kindle the fire, and the women knead dough to make cakes for the Queen of Heaven. And they pour out libations to other gods in order to spite me. You can look further. There's also sacrifices offered. He mentions this throughout Jeremiah. Jeremiah 44, verses 17 to 19. It just talks about, we don't need to read it all. But in verse 18 it says, "But since we stopped burning sacrifices to the Queen of Heaven and pouring out libations to her, we have lacked everything and have met our end by the sword and by famine." See, supposing how well the prosperity movement, supposing by naming and claiming things in Jesus' name, you actually started getting things. would that mean that once you find out you're in error and you're interpreting scriptures incorrectly, would that mean that you still do it? That's what these people were saying. Hey, look, if worshiping a false goddess works, we'll keep doing it because we're getting those goodies that we're wanting. She's prospering us. Goes on and mentions even further down in verse 25, offering sacrifices to the Queen of Heaven. Judges chapter 2, well, we don't even need to turn to it right now. Judges chapter 2 verses 11 and 13 and 1 Samuel chapter 17 verses 3 and 4, they talk about the false worship of Baal and Ashtaroth. And again, that was a male-female deity type. And so we see that this kind of paganism even crept into Israel as well. But the history of this Babylonian false religion, this mystery religion, if you will, that started with Nimrod and had the mother-son worship that crept into even Roman Catholicism, the history of this Babylonian false religion will be complete when the end time false church gives way to the Antichrist. When you look back in Revelation 17, in verse 6, it says, "And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered greatly." One thing that I can tell you about Roman Catholicism, when you look at its history, and when you look at many of the people that the Roman Catholic Church over the centuries has put to death, and you read the views of these guys, there was a solid percentage of the guys that they put to death were put to death because they were true believers of Jesus Christ, and they made complaints about non-biblical things the church was doing. So if Roman, the Church of Rome, if Roman Catholicism is going to become the end time false church, the one world religious system, it would fulfill verse 6 very easily in that she has shed the blood of the saints throughout the centuries. However, if Rome isn't the end time false church, okay, whatever end time false church comes in is going to shed the blood of the saints with the Antichrist. So this does not necessarily prove that Rome's it, but I think Rome has got the structure. When I started holding it, even when I left Roman Catholicism, I said, no way, the reformers were wrong, But when I found out that when Ronald Reagan brought down communism, and it turned out that it was because he was in meetings, secret meetings with the Pope, and the two of them decided how they can bring down Catholicism by the, bring down communism by the Catholic Pope, getting guys like Wekalenza in Poland to get the Catholic people to take a stand against it, and then all of a sudden the Soviet Union crumpled. I had thought that that all the power, all the political power that the Roman Church had, I thought was gone centuries ago, and apparently I was mistaken. And so that's when I saw them as a viable candidate. But
so it is that their direct military power is no longer.
Yeah, and then you
make that indirect military power.
Even the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, they were actually started as a commando unit to lead people to Roman Catholicism at the point of the sword. But now they've become the intellectual defenders of Catholicism, or at least they're supposed to. Some of them don't apostatize and some of their biggest problems, but some of them have been great defenders of Catholicism and even of Christianity, like Frederick Copleston.
Yeah. Have you noticed that some of the real liberal churches now in America are broadening the feminine side of God?
Yeah.
There's some letters to do that, but there's a
Well, the thing is, there are certain, one of the toughest, let's say Roman Catholicism, and then they're getting into this, let's bring everybody back into the church even if they disagree. They're getting into that type of thinking right now. The toughest people to bring in would be New Agers, because they're pantheistic, they're not theistic, they're not far from Christianity as you can get, and the Muslims, because they're convinced they're the ones who faith. Well, the two open doors they have there, the open door they have with the New Agers, is this elevation of Mary, for all practical purposes, to the point of worship. The woman's livers and those that are in Wicca, modern witchcraft, that are worshiping the earth goddess, you could see them going for this type of thing because they've got the female deity right there. But with the Muslims, what I found out was in Fatima, Portugal, when Mary supposedly appeared, the Muslims had taken over Portugal when Muhammad was alive, and Muhammad named it, I believe it was while he was alive, but it was named after Muhammad's favorite daughter who died when she was young. She died before Muhammad did. And her name was Fatima. And he said that she is the greatest woman in heaven except Mary. So when the supposed Mary visited Fatima, because of it, any statue of Mary that is a statue of Our Lady of Fatima, Muslims will bow before it to this day. So, I don't know. Is there an open door there to Islam? I don't know. It's real hard to say. Because they are about as exclusive as Christians are, as true Christians are, that they will not accept any other faith. But anyway, that's the vision there. And so that's just this mystery behind this Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth, the false religious system, the kind of the mystery, you know, with the Antichrist just talks about him as the mystery of lawlessness that's at work. Well, this is kind of the mystery of false religions that is at work. The vision is explained in verses 7 to 18. The beast, verses 7 to 8. And the angel said to me, "Why do you wonder? I shall tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and is about to come up out of the abyss and to go to destruction. And those who dwell on the earth will wonder whose name has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast, that he was and is not, and will come." The beast, the harlot rides this beast, but later on she is cast out. The rulers of the beast kingdom actually knock her off the horse, if you will. But she's right. She's saying, "Hey, I could use this one world government to further my goal." Well, apparently the beast is saying, "I could let this one world religion ride me and further my goal, and then when I don't need her anymore, I can wax her." But the beast comes out of the abyss. Is it later in this chapter? Or no, it was in the last chapter. Remember the beast? The beast who was the Antichrist, the false prophet, and and Lucifer himself, there's three unclean spirits come out of them like frogs. So the Antichrist is possessed not primarily by Lucifer, but by a separate demon than Lucifer. And apparently this demon comes out of the abyss, so we know it's not Lucifer. Lucifer is not going to be cast into the abyss until Jesus Christ returns. He'll be cast there for 1,000 years, and that's going to be during the millennial reign of Christ. Then he'll be released, and there'll be the final, Satan's last revolt, his last stand, as he marches those who are grown up during the millennial kingdom that decide to side with him on Jerusalem, and then Jesus defeats them and throws them into the lake of fire, He stays forever and ever. So this demon comes out of the abyss, possesses the Antichrist as of the beast is, and this could be the false resurrection here that they wondered how, you know, he was, that he was not, that he is, and the world follows him and wondered it. Could be the false resurrection spoken about in Revelation 13, verse 3. Then again, it just could be that maybe, because see, the beast means both the end time world government and the ruler of that end time world government. So it can mean either one, depending on the context. So it could be that it just, the Roman Empire died, it was gone, and all of a sudden they got revived in the last days. But it seems that if people are going to worship it, I think some type of fourth resurrection. If John F. Kennedy had risen a week later or 3 days later after his death and then said he was God and demanded to be worshipped, I bet he would have got a significant number of people to follow him. But the Antichrist, his accomplishments, his resume is going to be a lot sharper than that. And so I see some type of false resurrection. But the beast, it says here, will be destroyed by Christ, but non-believers will be deceived by him. Now the seven heads are explained in verses 9 to 11. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And they are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must remain a little while. And the beast which was and is not is himself also an eighth, and is one of seven, and he goes to destruction. So the seven heads are seven different world empires that also have shared in false religion throughout the ages. But not only are they seven different world empires, they're also the seven hills of Rome. So it's kind of a double meaning here. The seven hills, the only city that we know that was famous for having seven hills was Rome. Babylon, not the case. You know, so many other cities that people have proposed, seven hills in Rome, even on their coins. In fact, I don't think I listed them here, but I have certain maps that actually list the names of the seven hills in Rome. So it's definitely pinpoint Rome, and that's why I think, again, and a world religion with much gold that's persecuted the saints, royalty, headquartered in Rome, you know, it sounds like Vatican City. That's the number one candidate. Could be wrong, but that's what it sounds like. It says also that the seven heads stand for the seven kings. Five have fallen. Now again, this was, remember the ones that are listed on the board, Egypt? If you view it as the kings that persecuted the nation of Israel, then the five that fell would be Egypt, then Assyria, then Babylon, then the Medo-Persian Empire, and then Greece. And then they were the five that fell, and then one is, John says, so that's the Roman Empire. That makes six. One is yet to come. That's the revived Roman Empire, which could be the United States of Europe right now. And then there's an eighth that is yet to come. There's still the same as the seventh. That's basically just the revived Roman Empire after the assassination attempt of the Antichrist, when Satan's probably going to give him the same choices that he gave to Christ. I'll give you all of my kingdom, the whole earth, if you just worship me. And then I'll possess you with one of my top ranking demons and all. And so it takes on a whole other dimension. So it's still a seventh. It's still a seventh. But it's so different that you can call it an eighth. And right, this revived Roman Empire here gave the Jews the right to practice their their sacrifices in the temple. But once the Antichrist is demon possessed, he's going to start slaughtering the Jews and not allow it. So that would be the seven, and then the eighth would be the seventh one as well. However, that's if it's in relation to Israel. If it's not in relation to Israel, if it's just the following war from the Babylonian false religion type, that would be the ancient Babylonian Empire instead of Egypt. Okay? So there's some speculation that first one's either Egypt or Babylon, because Egypt really didn't reign over as wide a territory as these others. These others were world empires. Egypt really wasn't, but they did dominate the Jews. So I would probably favor the ancient Chaldean or ancient Babylonian Empire, then Assyria, then Babylon, then the Medo-Persian, then the Greek Empire, and that was the five that have fallen. The one that is during John's time was the Roman Empire, the one that's yet to come, the revived Roman Empire, and then once the Antichrist is demon-possessed, and they start persecuting the Jews, that's an eighth, but it's really the seventh. The five kings that fell, we mentioned them. The one king that is the Roman Empire of John's day, the one that's yet to come, the revived Roman Empire, combined with the apostate church. And the eighth king is when the Antichrist ousts the apostate church. Now, well, that's questionable. That's just full of that. Some believe that right at the midway point he ousts the apostate church. See,
man. And replaces it with himself.
With himself, yeah. And that's a tough one.
Well, it could very well be that he just kind of absorbs it.
Well,
makes himself ahead of it.
It could be. That's when he comes to power, it could be that's when they give him his allegiance.
Well, and you saw in England, when they went to the Church of England instead of the Church of Rome, he didn't so much eliminate it as he took it over. And himself ahead of the Church of England and kept all the same hierarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
The same thing could happen here.
See, the false prophet, some guys think the Pope is going to be the Antichrist. I doubt it. It's a tough one. And I think at the most the Pope could be maybe a false prophet who backs the Antichrist, kind of a John the Baptist, Jesus type relationship with him. Except John the Baptist said, don't follow me, follow Jesus because he's God.
That could be the same thing here.
Follow
me, follow the Antichrist, he's God.
Yeah, but I think this would be more, don't follow me, follow him, he's God. I'm just saying it because this guy's got more demonic power than I got. So
That wouldn't be the public image.
No, the public image would definitely be the John the Baptist. All I'm saying is the humility of John the Baptist is not going to be there in that false prophet, whoever he is. But anyway, the ten horns are described and explained in verses 12 and 13. And the ten horns, as you saw, are ten kings who have not yet received the kingdom, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. They have one purpose, and they give their power and authority to the beast. So the ten kings of the revived Roman Empire could be 10 nations in the United States of Europe. Right now, they got about 13 or 14. But there is another possibility. I'm writing it into my notes right now. when they wanted the United States of Europe, the European community, when they wanted to start, they used to, at one time, they were just the European Economic Community, the EEC. But their goal was to become the United States of Europe, one empire. On paper, they are one empire right now. Yeah. The difference between going from France to Spain is like the difference between going from New Jersey to New York now. It's not like the difference between going from America to Canada.
The only exception is that the currency was still there.
Yeah, and but even there, they dropped something in between the two that was...
Well, there's no more tariff barriers.
Yeah. No more tariff barriers, okay. And when they wanted to start the European Economic Community, in Brussels, one of their headquarters, and mainly it's headquartered out of Rome, though. But when they wanted to start one of their headquarters in Brussels, they had 10, still do to this day, 10 flagpoles flying, and they only had 6 nations. They said, why do you got 10 flagpoles? Because we want 10 nations. Some we might go over 10, we might have less than 10, but in the end we want Europe broken down into one unified United States of Europe, 10 nations. Well, now they got the United States of Europe, and they got, I think, something like 12 nations or 13, and it's possible going as high as 14 or 15. They're either going to get that, they are the 10 kings. So you got the 7 heads and 10 horns of the, well, even that can throw us for a loop. Either the 10 kings are going to be based in Europe, or there's another possibility. I believe it was either, I think it was 1968 where the Club of Rome got together. They met in Rome, and there were a bunch of one worlders trying to get the United Nations to be this one world government and all. And they broke the world down into 10 different regions. So it could be the fact that it starts in Europe makes it the revived Roman Empire, but then it's going to spread as Europe did throughout the whole inhabited earth. This is going to spread throughout the whole inhabited earth, which just takes on the whole globe, so that the 10 kings of 10 kingdoms might be 10 regions throughout the whole world, the United States included. And that's what the Club of Rome wanted to do. So you got two possibilities there. It could be the 10 kings could be 10 kings of the United States of Europe, or they could be 10 kings from all over. The President of the United States might become one of the 10 kings. So it's a real tough one to fall there, but they are the 10 kings of the revived Roman Empire. I'll lock up when I leave.
Well, what I wanted to tell you, we have a teacher down in the kindergarten that has 9 o'clock and 9:15 appointments.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. So check the kindergarten room before you go out.
Okay.
If she's still there, don't set the alarm.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good deal.
I hope they get the one royalties now that he's on my tape.
Okay.
Give it on.
Okay, that was, for those of you listening, like I said, that was Newt Gingrich stopped by and asked a little advice, a little political advice here. Okay, verse 14. These will wage war against the Lamb. 10 kings will wage war against the Lamb, the Lord Jesus Christ. And the Lamb will overcome them because he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with them are the called and the chosen and faithful. And so the revived Roman Empire will war with Christ, but Christ will crush the revived Roman Empire, and then he's going to rule the earth for 1,000 years. We'll look into that when we get to Revelation chapter 20. Christ's followers are referred to as faithful, but the harlot is unfaithful. Verse 15, the waters that the harlot sits upon are mentioned. And he said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And so the waters that the harlot sits upon is symbolic of all the non-believers of the world. They will join the apostate one world church. Okay? It's just a way of saying the waters are the Gentiles, the non-Jews, people from all nations. Verses 16 and 17, and the 10 horns which you saw, and the beast, these will hate the harlot. So you have the revived Roman Empire really doesn't like the end time world church. They were using her, even though she was riding them and steering them at first. Now they're figuring, hey, now we're in position to knock her off and do our own thing. And the 10 horns that you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, and will make her desolate and naked, and will eat her flesh, and will burn her up with fire. For God has put it in their hearts to execute his purpose by having a common purpose, and by giving their kingdom to the beast, until the words of God should be fulfilled. And so the revived Roman Empire will use the apostate church to gain power, but then they'll destroy the apostate church. It becomes desolate, naked, eaten, burned. The Antichrist will then assume, well, if this is at the halfway point, then he assumes all power, Revelation 13:5. and he claims to be God, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. So this happens right at the midpoint. You know, if leading into the tribulation, if these two go into cahoots, but then at the halfway point when he proclaims to be God, he tears up the end time fourth church, then it would occur there at that point. But unknowingly, the 10 kings are going to serve God's purpose by getting the kingdom to the Antichrist here, if that is the case. Now, the other possible scenario is that they come in cahoots at the halfway point or somewhere in it, but it happens later in the tribulation. They decide to wipe out the end time false church. So if they wipe out the end time false church, such as in, let's say if it's Roman Catholicism, if they wipe out the Roman Catholic hierarchy, they still keep an end time false religion of their own. And so it's real tough to say what is giving here. If this is at the halfway point or if this is much later on in the tribulation period. And when the Antichrist issues the mark of the beast and he's being worshipped, is that still part of the harlot's religion? Or is that the point where the break is made between the two? And so that's open to debate. To be honest with you, if I really had to guess, my guess would be that the worship of the Antichrist is part of this apostate end time world church, and that it's just much later for political reasons that her hierarchy is devastated. The woman, the harlot, is mentioned in verse 18, and the woman you saw is the great city, city of seven hills, Rome, is the great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. When John wrote that, there was only one city that fit that description right there. And it was Rome. Peter even refers to Rome as Babylon in, I believe, 2 Peter. It was a code name for Rome, so that, you know, it was very common for your mail to be searched. I'd write a letter, give it to John, and then John's got to bring it to Jeff. Well, some Roman soldier can just stop him and say, wait, you're one of those Christians. Let me make sure that your letter doesn't have any anti-Rome propaganda. And you just read it. And so a lot of times they would write letters, but the common code word by early Christians for Rome was Babylon. They used an ancient city that was the center of false religion and world empire for it. That's Revelation 17. Let's move right on to Revelation 18. Try to make some ground there. Now, again, the two possibilities here is that Revelation 17 and 18 both deal with the same event, the destruction of the great city, which would be Rome. So some say it's a rebuilt Babylon, but I just think the evidence is against it. It doesn't have seven hills. It wasn't a great city at the time John was writing. So it could be one possibility that Revelation 17 and Revelation 18 both deal with the same event, the destruction of the great city of Rome, which is the headquarters of the end time false church. But the other possibility is that Revelation 17 strictly deals with the fall of ecclesiastical Babylon, or, you know, ecclesiastical Rome, while Revelation 18 strictly deals with the fall of political Babylon. So in other words, in Revelation 17, Rome is devastated, but just to knock off the Pope or whoever the leader is there. But in Revelation 18, it's the Antichrist, his kingdom is getting knocked off. So two possibilities there, and it depends what day of the week. I'm kind of favoring more and more, and they both deal with the same event. That even when it says God is judging Rome, he's using, just as I said right in this earlier passage, he's using the 10 kings to actually fulfill his purpose when they purpose to destroy it. And then at the second coming of Christ, it's real clear in Revelation 19 that Jesus takes out the Antichrist and the false prophet in the kingdom, and the political aspect. Revelation 19. So look at Revelation 18. Verses 1 to 3 talk about the fall of Babylon being announced. Now, it starts off, after these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illumined with his glory. Now, after these things, does that mean after the destruction of ecclesiastical Babylon, then we're going to see the destruction of political Babylon? Or does after these things just mean now we're going to get kind of a second glimpse, as you mentioned with the Chronicles and Kings distinction, a second glimpse of the same event? So again, it's real tough. So another angel from heaven with great authority, the earth was illumined with his glory, so he comes from right from God's presence. His proclamation in verse 2, and he cried out with a mighty voice, saying, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the great. She has become a dwelling place of demons, and a prison of every unclean spirit, and a prison of every unclean and hateful bird." And so the angel announces that Babylon the Great is fallen. Babylon, which is Rome, has become the home of demons, unclean spirit, and birds. It's just another symbolic word for demons. In the parables of Jesus, birds are symbolic of demons. Verse 3. For all the nations have drunk, still the proclamation of the angel, for all the angels have drunk of the wine of the passion of her immorality. The kings of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich by the wealth of her sensuality. So nations, kings, and merchants commit immorality with Babylon the Great. This isn't talking about physical immorality, it's talking about spiritual immorality. Unethical practices are probably included, but the main emphasis is on idolatry and the worship of false gods. Verses 4 and 5, God calls his people to evacuate Babylon, a call for the people of God to evacuate Babylon. Verses 4 and 5, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, that you may not participate in her sins, and that you may not receive her of her plague. For her sins have piled up as high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." So a voice from heaven calls God's people to leave Babylon, to leave Rome. We have the same type of thing in Jeremiah 51, verses 44 to 45. The same type of thing in Genesis chapter 19, verses 15 to 22. God there calls his Lot and his family out of Sodom and Gomorrah. But he calls his people to leave Babylon, which is Rome, to escape her sins and her plagues. The plagues could be the bowl of Revelation 16. I don't know. It's real tough to say. God's people, too, you know, if they're in Rome, they've got to have some friends who are non-believers, who have the mark, who are somehow taking care of them. But it's amazing when you read the stories of even during the World War II, and some of the Jewish people hiding in places in Germany and living in hidden rooms and houses and being able to survive so long. But her sins were piled up as high as heaven. It's just like the tower. It kind of alludes to the Tower of Babel piling up as high as heaven. And God has remembered Babylon, her iniquities, and you know, God promised in Jeremiah 31:34 the new covenant that he would make with his people, the Jewish people, that once they turn back to him, their iniquities and their sins he would remember no more. But here Babylon is unrepentant, so God remembers her iniquities, and only judgment is all that she has to look forward to. Verses 6 to 8, the judgment against Babylon. Pay her back even as she has paid, and give back to her double according to her deeds, and the cup which she has mixed, mix twice as much for her. To the degree that she glorified herself and lived sensually, to the same degree give her torment and mourning. For she says in her heart, "I sit as a queen, and I am not a widow, and will never see mourning." For this reason, in one day her plagues will come, pestilence and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire, for the Lord God who judges her is strong. Now, it's referring to Babylon as a her. And it makes it sound a lot like, you know, there's no chapter break there. It makes it sound a lot like she's the same woman, the same city. And so though the harlot, the woman, is both the anti-fall church and the city, and so it makes it hard to see two different judgments. If there are two different judgments, then it's the bowls of God's wrath that are wiping her out. But if God is judging her through the ten kings and they burn her with fire, then it's the leaders of the revived Roman Empire that actually take her out. So that's what's real tough about this passage. Now, if I was Elmer Towns from Liberty University, a test on the test you would have, Revelation 17 refers to ecclesiastical Babylon, and Revelation 18 refers to political Babylon, true or false. And because I told you, it could go either way. But Elmer Towns at Liberty University always would say, A is true in one sense, but in another sense, A is false. And then on the test, you would see A is true, true or false. And it's like, man, why? What's this guy trying to do? And,
usually you pray for true false test, but for him, you pray for essay questions.
Yeah, I think I would have, I tell you though, I always did better than I thought on his test. So I think that
he was giving credit either way.
He was giving credit either way, or he meant it one way, and it was so vague and I got so many complaints. But they were just grade it right. You take either one on it because it's obviously he's got the problem, not them. Because he wasn't grading his own test, you know.
He was big wig
over there. He's one of the two vice presidents we got. Okay, the judgment against it. He's a great guy, but his name is Elmer. So right away you think of Elmer Fudd. He's got a bald head and he's got a lip. A list.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a dynamite guy. He's just a real godly man. Never in a bad mood. But anyway, the judgment against Babylon, God decides to pay them back double. So it's even more than an eye for an eye. You know, it's two eyes for an eye. Babylon glorified herself, called herself a queen. Babylon lived sensuously. And her plagues will come on one day. Pestilence, there'll be mourning, famine, Babylon will be destroyed with fire. Now Revelation 17, verses 16 and 17, it said that the ten kings would wipe out Babylon, the woman, and would fulfill God's purpose by doing it. So that might be the same thing. But it's the Lord who's judging her, but is it the Lord judging her separately after ecclesiastical Babylon's already been wiped out, or are they the same event as the Lord judging her through the ten kings who are slamming her there? The kings of the earth mourn, verses 9 and 10 of Revelation 18. And the kings of the earth who committed acts of immorality and lived sensually with her will weep and lament over her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance because of the fear of her torment, saying, "Woe, woe, the great city Babylon, the strong city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys their cargoes anymore." Actually, I read one verse too many for their... But the kings of the earth mourn. They committed acts of immorality with her, so that they taken a false worship. They had lived sexually with her. They will weep and mourn because they see Babylon burn. So, you know, their prophets are out the window. The kings will keep their distance for fear of her torment. And in 1 hour, the city of Babylon has been judged, and again, the city is most likely Rome. The merchants of the earth... Oh, it was the kings of the earth mourning in verses 9 and 10. And now verses 11 to 19 actually is the merchants, so the ones who are really making the big profit are verses 11 to 19. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys their cargoes anymore. Cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and every kind of citron wood and every article of ivory and every article made from very costly wood and bronze and iron and marble and cinnamon and spice and incense and perfume and frankincense and wine and olive oil and fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and cargoes of horses and chariots and slaves and human lives. And the fruit you long for has gone from you, and all the things that were luxurious and splendid have passed away from you, and men will no longer find them. The merchants of these things who became rich from her will stand at a distance because of the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning, saying, "Woe, woe, the great city, she who was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour such great wealth has been laid waste, and every shipmaster and every passenger and sailor and as many as make their living by the sea stood at a distance and were crying out as they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like the great city? And they threw dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city in which all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she has been laid waste. So they will weep, the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over Babylon's fall, for no one buys their cargoes any longer. They have become rich through it. Several, many things are mentioned, the gold, silver, precious stones, pearls, fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet, citron wood, ivory, bronze, iron, marble, cinnamon, spice, incense, perfume, frankincense, wine, olive oil, flour, wheat, cattle, sheep, horses, chariots, slaves, and human lives. Babylon's luxuries will be destroyed. Now, Matthew 6, 19 and 20 really comes in really good here. It's a message we always need to look at over and over again just for our own lives, especially living here in America, a land of prosperity. Matthew 6, verses 19 and 20, do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. Verse 24 says, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will hold the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon is the word for riches. You cannot serve both God and riches. It's either one or the other. That doesn't mean it's a sin to be rich, but it means it's a sin and it's idolatry to make wealth your God. We made some good ground there and marked down where we left.